Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It's time. It's David Summers, and it's another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall to wall and treetop tall with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. All right, so Ron, I understand you got a little snow flurry action going on this morning, and kind of cool up there on the mountain.
Yeah, man, it's about to hit freezing here, and started off about 44 degrees, and it's dropped all morning long, and down to freezing now, and maybe going to get a little bit of white on the ground.
Well, it could happen. Not going to happen here in Southeast Alabama, but now it's, I think that we're at 55 or so, somewhere in the mid 50s, and it ain't going to get no warmer today. Hey, I tell you what, you've been rocking the podcasting world, Ron, for more than 7 years with 377 studcasts already recorded. They're about most everything to do with the four generation Welch family of wrestlers, referees, promoters, and owners of territories. Your family is the oldest and largest family on the planet. Now, you've also covered most everything else in professional wrestling on your podcast, but now, for the first time, you are finally at the point where you can begin to use some of your own TV shows from the 80s and incorporate those into your studcast.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing, isn't it, Dave? 7 years ago, when I think back in 2017, when I started doing these studcasts, I had no idea what a streaming channel was, much less that I would ever someday find enough of my old Southeastern and Continental USA TV shows to build my own streaming channel. So I'm soon going to release not only those TV shows, but 377 studcast. I'm going to have stud stories. I'm going to have studcast archives. Ask the Stud shows, over 100 short rides with the Stud. DVDs of all kinds of stars from my wrestling days and from my wrestling shows.
Yep.
Plus all of the other wrestling content that I've created myself over the last 7 years. And now, Dave, I think the best is yet to come. I worked very hard, man, for years, on every studcast, basically, to describe the cards, the TV matches, the interviews, and so much more. And now fans are finally going to get to experience that old adage that a picture's worth a thousand words. And that fact is going to be coming to life. We're going to be able to see, and everybody out there for themselves, what I've been describing for years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to dramatically enhance every new studcast for sure.
Oh, there's no doubt about that at all. We're going to keep everybody informed each studcast now exactly when the streaming channel becomes available and when the new studcast begins. Speaking of beginning, where are we going to begin this studcast today? This is number 378. So where do we start writing on this one?
Well, this studcast is going to be covering the last week in November of 1980. It's got two completely different Thanksgiving cards in this one, basically in two different territories as well. So we're also going to return to Tennessee for a look at the new owners there, Ric Flair and Blackjack Mulligan. We're going to take a look at their Thanksgiving card presented basically by the Crockett family, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling over there on the other side of the mountain in the Carolinas. I'm also going to be comparing that card with what was happening on the same day, 500 miles to the south in Mobile, Alabama, where it's going to be Thanksgiving night in Mobile. And on this, it's going to take place, this match in Mobile, these matches in the main arena in that complex. And I'm also going to give everybody that same card that was used in all three major markets for the TV show promoting that card and the results from it. But Birmingham, you know, was going to get completely different card than the rest of the territory, because we had to skip the first Monday, only 4 days after that fantastic opening night, to get to the second Monday after that first event, which was going to be, our traditional Monday night was going to be the night for Birmingham Wrestling from then on. So I'll also, for the first time, give everybody at the end of the studcast the attendances for now what's going to be four major markets rather than three in Southeastern. And I'll be comparing the results of the attendances of the Tennessee Thanksgiving show to the Alabama Thanksgiving show. Then, Dave, hopefully we'll have enough time for a learning tree question.
I don't know, Stud. That sounds like a lot, as usual, but I'm very hopeful we'll get that learning tree question in this week. It's always, a ton of information when we do get it in there. So it sounds to me like we're going to be riding back into Tennessee to begin this studcast.
Yep, that's indeed where we're headed, Dave. Right. We're going back to the Knoxville Coliseum. It's going to be Thanksgiving night, Thursday, November 27th, 1980. It's not going to be a night. It's going to be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the former Southeastern fans at this point, they were no longer seeing a TV show that was produced in Tennessee. They were watching the weekly Mid-Atlantic show from the other side of the Smoky Mountains. So they had lost that program. There was a very strong card, this one, for this Thanksgiving there. Especially it was strong for the Mid-Atlantic fans who were accustomed to the TV show and the stars on it. But for the Knoxville fans, they kind of had yet to forget about the old stars and the TV show, what it was like on Thanksgiving Day years earlier. So I'm pretty sure it's not the only Thanksgiving show the Crocketts ran that day. Mm-hmm. They probably ran a second show that night somewhere in the Carolinas.
I can only imagine who and what came to mind for the former Southeastern fans on that day. All right, so who was on that first Thanksgiving card in Knoxville presented by promoters and wrestlers from the Mid-Atlantic Territory?
Well, I'm sure the former Southeastern fans had to be missing Les Thatcher, who was still doing a Southeastern TV show. None of them knew that, but obviously it was no longer in Knoxville, but it was 500 miles south down there in Dothan, man, WTVY. And, it was with a lot of the same stars that those Southeastern fans remembered very well, I'm sure. Mongolian Stomper, Joe LeDuc, Bob Armstrong, Don Carson, myself, my brother, many, many more. And I have to admit, this card from the Carolinas, though, was by far their best yet. Opening match on this card was two wrestlers I had never heard of, Tony Russo versus Tony Tosi. Second match was not much better. In my mind, I had not heard a couple of these names before either. Les Thatcher, who was still doing Southeastern show, was no longer in Knoxville. And since he's down south, so the second match was a lot different. It had Wayne Rogers and Jerry Caldwell, who I'd never heard of, against a team that was going to be very soon visiting in Southeastern for a year. And that was going to be the New Zealand Sheepherders. At that point, I'd never heard of that team. And pretty crazy that within the next year, just over a year, they're going to be in Southeastern doing their own thing. And the rest of the card was a triple main event. Very good matches, no doubt, in this triple main event. First main event was for the United States Championship, was Ric Flair against Greg Valentine. Jimmy Superfly Snuka wrestled the Superstar in the next one. In the last match, it was for the NWA TV title, Roddy Piper against Paul Jones.
Wow. All right, I've heard many of those names, with Ric Flair, of course, soon to be, at that time, the NWA World Champion. What kind of attendance did the Mid-Atlantic Thanksgiving show have, and how did it compare with the Georgia Southeastern Owners card in 1979 and yours on the previous years?
Well, the Mid-Atlantic show had almost 3,500. It was by far the biggest crowd that they had since taking over the territory months earlier, and it was almost exactly the same size as the Georgia promoter's card the year before, 1979. They had Hulk on that card. They had a great card as well, but they still only had basically 3,500 people. And we had sold out basically every Coliseum show that we ever ran there. We did the first one in 1976. I came there in 74. Obviously, we didn't have one in 75. By 1976, we were doing well enough that we were running quite a few shows in the Coliseum. We decided, let's take a shot at Thanksgiving night. And that year, 76, 77, 78, all three of those years, the attendance for all three of those events were sellouts. They were all around 5,500.
Wow. Your Southeastern beat both territories on Thanksgiving nights by about 2,000 fans, it sounds like. All right, so I've got to ask, are we going to continue to visit the old Southeastern territory in Knoxville, Stud? It's been a while.
Well, you know, not very often, basically, from here on out, Dave, because fans are going to be seeing some original, actual video of matches and interviews from the new streaming channels, Southeastern TV shows, which we're going to have on just about each Studcast. We'll have some type of something to do with actually watching some stuff from the old shows. And that's going to start very soon. And as we get into 1981, which, you know, in the time frame, we're in 1980 at this point, and we're talking about Thanksgiving night. We're not far from getting into 1981, and we're going to continue seeing those shows and the TV shows all the way into the summer of 1985, until the time Southeastern Wrestling became continental.
All right, cool deal. All right, so where are we going to be riding right now, Stud? How do we start today?
We're going to be returning to Birmingham because after an 11-day wait there before their next event, they had missed the entire card that all three of the major markets down south had gotten the week before. So the TV show we did in the last Studcast was based upon what happened in that Birmingham tournament. In the last Studcast, we used that tournament and a couple of videos from it as the focal point for the TV show for all of the markets down south. And now it was Birmingham's turn to finally get that same card that the other three markets had gotten the week before. So, Dave, to make it simple, we had two totally different cards for the territory the week of Thanksgiving 1980. One card for Birmingham on Monday, November the 24th, 1980, and the other for the three major cities down south, particularly Mobile, where that was their Thanksgiving night card was, November 27th, 1980. And obviously that same card was going to be in all three of those markets down there. So let's start with Birmingham's card for Monday, November the 24th, 1980. They were getting a Southeastern Championship match with Mr. Wrestling 2 against the champion Mongolian Stomper by Don Carson, managed by Don. And that was the same thing that the other three major cities had got the week before, exactly the same card. Birmingham also got that eight-man tag that happened as a result of the last match in Birmingham, Alabama's championship belt tournament night. Bob Armstrong had beaten the Stomper in the finals, so was presented the belt by Don Curtis, who left the ring, and after the presentation of the belt and Curtis back in the back, Bob Armstrong was immediately attacked by Ron Bass, Super Pro, Jerry Stubbs, Don Carson, and the Stomper. They all got on and they took his belt and went back to the stage and made a spectacle of themselves on the stage.
Wow.
And so in the personality profile of the last show, Don Curtis brought Don Carson out to the profile set. And he added to Bob to the Joe LeDuc and the Norvell Austin and the Brad Armstrong team. At that point, he decided we're going to have an 8-man tag, and here's going to be who you're going to be wrestling. And then he set some additional rules for special 2-out-of-3 fall match, 8-man tag, and fans went crazy for that. And then he basically laid the law down on Don. He says, you know, if your team loses, Don, you're going to be there by yourself for a minute. So, and I got a lot of people that really enjoyed that. You know, Doc Curtis set him up good, and Rowdy, he paid for it.
All right.
Then in the special ad event, Bob Armstrong and the Super Pro were already in the 8-man tag. They were going to be wrestling in a special challenge match. And if the Super Pro lost, he was going to have to leave Southeastern forever. But if he won, he was going to get to remove his mask forever and continue to wrestle in Southeastern as Randy Rhodes. Charlie Cook was in a match against the newcomer Dennis Condrey, who was the cousin of Randy Rhodes, and he was going to be making his first ever Southeastern Gulf Coast appearance. Brad Armstrong was going to be wrestling against Jerry Stubbs. Imagine that match. Roy Lee Welch was opening the night against Big C number 2, Jerry Brown, great, great wrestler from all kind, been in probably 10 territories.
Okay, this card that you just announced had already been a really good one the week before in the three major markets, producing very large crowds for that time of year. All right, so let's go to the Mobile area, the main arena Thanksgiving night card that is also going to be in the other two major markets of Montgomery and Dothan. So a duplicate card for all three of those territories. Set all that up for us.
Okay, so this was a great card as well, man. And this was a totally different card than what they're going to be seeing in Birmingham. The opening match was featuring the return of Ricky Fields, a very popular wrestler in that part of the country down there, versus the new Japanese wrestler named Oki Shikina. It was his first night in. It was a new star in the second match as well. This one came from New York City, man. It was Johnny Valiant, one of the famous Valiant brothers. He was going to be wrestling El Lobo. Third match was Big Ron Bass, managed by Don Carson, against Charlie Cook. Fourth match was for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship. Norvell Austin was trying to regain the belt that he had held for a couple of weeks from the new champion, who was now Jerry Stubbs again. Then in the fifth match, new Southeastern Tag Champions, Bob and Brad Armstrong, who won the belts on TV, the last television show. And they won them from Ron Bass and the Super Pro. They were going to be defending for the first time ever against another new team that was just arriving, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rhodes. So third championship match on the card had Joe LeDuc going after the Southeastern belt to the Mongolian Stomper, managed by Don Carson.
All right. That's a great card also, Ryan, with three championship matches during the week of Thanksgiving. All right. Hey, this is a good place to take our break. Let's do that. And when we come back, we're going to find out how you made a TV show work with two totally different cards in the same week. That is coming up when this Studcast continues. Okay, Studcast fans, Ron has not done a live Facebook appearance in many years. He has some very important information to pass along to everyone, and he's chosen to do it on his Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud Facebook page, live Thursday, December 12th, 2024, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. He's going to be discussing his new streaming channel and new Studcast that will be coming real soon. If you're not already friends with him on that side, go there, like him, and automatically become Ron's friend. Then you too can join him live. Don't miss this important announcement. The Stud thanks you in advance. All right, everybody, welcome back in. Another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. I'm David Summers. This is Studcast number 378. It's titled Tennessee Stud Saves Southeastern. All right, before the break, Ron, I asked about how you were going to make two totally different cards work on one TV show. Can't wait to hear this.
Well, not a problem, actually, Dave. The TV show that Birmingham fans watched last week was the one built around their record Southeastern opening night in the Alabama Championship Tournament for the belt. And it was what happened in Birmingham that produced the card that we're going to have to wait for 11 days to see. They're going to have to wait, the Birmingham fans, for 11 days after that opening night to get to their second match, and that's going to be on a Monday, finally, November 24th, 1980. So they had seen the interviews of their card with the wrestlers talking about their next event on the first show 2 days after the live Birmingham event. They were going to see a second TV show. They were going to have two Saturdays, two shows before they had another live event. And that second show was going to be plugging the same event with 8 more minutes of brand new interviews to further promote the event taking place 2 days later.
All right. Now I kind of see why you were not worried about your new Star City having to miss a week. You just doubled up on the interviews, making the fans that much more eager for the next event.
We weren't worried about Birmingham at all, basically, Dave. In fact, we thought it might draw almost as many fans as it had the first night, that record crowd. And it was this second TV show since Birmingham opened that we focused on. It opened with Les and Charlie wishing everybody a happy Thanksgiving, then welcoming the new Alabama champion, Bob Armstrong, with his belt to the set. And wow, did he get a big roar from the fans. They announced it was the last championship match of the month on this show because it was rating period. And this time it was going to be for the new Alabama belt. And Bob Armstrong was going to be defending that belt against Big Ron Bass. And Bob said he was honored to be asked to do this today and that he looked forward to it. And again, you know, obviously got another round of applause. And then it opened up with a champ. This show had opened with a champ, and it was going to close with one.
Okay, I mean that's a great match, and it should be. All right, did Charlie and Les say anything about the rest of the TV matches?
Well, they said there would be a couple of new stars on this show that had just arrived, and a special video appearance from another fan favorite that had not been seen for weeks. Along with Joe LeDuc, going to be on the personality profile, and much more. It was a loaded show, that was for sure. The first match was the same wrestler that opened last week's TV show. But his entrance this time created much more havoc than the last introduction that he had. And as he usually had, the same kind of havoc it usually created. His manager didn't hold him back this week. And he had this week before when Southeastern Don Curtis was on the show.
All right, you don't have to say any more, Stud. I hope the Mongolian Stomper didn't make up for last week.
Oh, boy, he certainly did, man. And he left both sets of bleachers almost totally empty before Carson could round him up and get him back into the ring. And it took fans a while to feel comfortable about coming back into the studio. But they never did get really settled down because Stomper's opponent was the big fan. They were all fans of the young and popular Ricky Gibson. I mean, Ricky Fields. And Ricky Fields at this point was being taken apart by the Stomper. I mean, Stomper was making it uncomfortable when he had him on the bleachers and when he didn't have him on the bleachers. So much so that Stomper's next Southeastern Championship opponent, Joe LeDuc, had to come to the ring, and he had to basically get involved. He came in, he stopped the Stomper from basically about to hurt Ricky Fields, and thank goodness Joe did that. Stomper and Carson went to the dressing room. They didn't want to have any problem with Joe LeDuc at that point.
Mm. All right, so who was in the second TV segment?
Well, it was the new Southeastern Tag Champions, Bob and Brad Armstrong. And they got a standing ovation from the studio audience, man, when they joined Charlie and Les to watch the unusual special challenge event based around the match between Super Pro and Bob Armstrong the week before. The one in which the Super Pro had basically two choices, depending on what happened in that match. The Super Pro basically put it all on the line, man. And if he lost Armstrong, he was going to have to leave forever. But if he won, even though he's, you know, he had lost the first time as Randy Rose, and they had to come back as a masked man, he was going to be able to pull that mask off if he won and stay there at Southeastern as Randy Rose. So the video showed the Super Pro getting helping hand from his new cousin who had just arrived last week. That was Dennis Condrey. And between the two of them, they managed to get the Pro a win, which it made sense. I mean, you got 2-on-1 with Bob. Randy Rose in the video, he at the end of that video, in every town that he had these matches in, he took a mask off and he threw it into the crowd. You know, that was the end of his mask, wearing a mask. And Bob told Charlie and Les, he said he hoped he would not live to regret that loss. And truer words, man, could not have been spoken.
All right, then. All right, so who was in the next TV match?
Well, it was Randy Rose and his cousin Dennis Condrey. And it was going to be the guys that they had just seen in the video. They were going to be in their very first match on television. So they were scheduled for a tag team championship match the following week against the champions, Bob and Brad Armstrong. And they were invited to stay at the set to get their first look at this new team, Bob and Brad. And obviously they did. Fans had no way of knowing at the time, Dave, but nor did the wrestlers in the territory, as a matter of fact, that these two guys, Randy Rose and Dennis Condrey, along with a third partner months down the road, were going to become one of the greatest tag teams of all time as the Midnight Express Incorporated. But they definitely didn't give the fans and the Armstrongs that impression with a classic, man, at the end of this, the end of their match. Wow, what an ending they had, man. Those boys were prepared to get themselves over. And there was the Armstrong sitting there watching this match, and at the end of it, they had a double clothesline finish. That clothesline, Condrey had his own way of doing it, and so did Randy Rose, a totally different way, and they hit their opponents with both of them at the same time. That was going to become their trademark as the Midnight Express.
Yeah, I think I remember that. They really became the talk of the sport. Over the next couple of years, they dominated in the ring, and their team name became the most famous and longest-running tag team name ever. All right, so was it personality profile time by now?
Yes, and this one was going to have two wrestlers on it, but only one of them was going to be on the set with Charlie and Les, and the other was going to be in a pre-recorded interview from his home in Pensacola, Florida. The profile opened with Charlie Platt introducing me. Roy Lee had brought the big camera that we had that was taking all the recordings of all the matches in the live arenas. He brought it to my house, and I sat down on the back deck of my home in Pensacola. And I kind of began a little story by telling everyone how much I appreciated all the cards and letters that I had received from the fans after being booted out of Southeastern Wrestling a couple of months earlier when four wrestlers basically beat me in a loser leaves match. You know, and I didn't lie about it. It did take four to do it. And then I said, you know, and now 3 weeks after I was robbed of the opportunity to compete in the sport I loved and in the country I loved, my brother got beat, just like me, by four men in a loser leaves match. And he had to, and I said, you know, I'm still here, but my brother had to leave his home in Pensacola. He had to take his family and move to Georgia to make a living in the sport he loved. And so I said, you know, I'd watched every Southeastern TV show since I had been thrown out of wrestling there and appreciated what Don Curtis had to say to me the week before, which he did say a nice little compliment to me. But I said, but I wasn't going to leave my home like my brother did and find another place to wrestle. I said, you know, losing one match and having to stay away for a year was just too long, especially when the match I lost was as one-sided as this match was. And then I said, you know, I know that Joe LeDuc is going to be wrestling the Mongolian Stomp for the belt next week. Mm-hmm. And I heard he was going to be on the personality profile, and I wish Joe luck. And I finished by saying, mark my words, this could be the end of Ron Fuller for the next 10 months. But then, maybe not. Mm-mm-mm. When I watched the TV show back, days after recording this, I was blown away, man, by the explosion from the studio crowd, man, and my good friend Joe LeDuc. Joe said he was proud of me for not leaving my home and family. And even though he had the chance to win the Southeastern belt next week, he knew, like me, that there was probably going to be more than just a Mongolian Stomper to beat to get that belt. He said he missed riding up and down the roads in Southeastern without Robert and me, you know, and that he would give anything to have us back in Southeastern, but he knew that wasn't going to happen. So it made him even more determined than ever to take that belt from the Mongol. Don Carson, Mongolian Stomper, and Ron Bass came out of their dressing room. They came across the studio to the profile set, and Joe got up. You know, there's three of them, right? He didn't know what the heck they were there for, but he stood his ground. He didn't go running off, man. He just stood up, and he was ready for whatever was going to happen next. And the fans in the studio, boy, they were on their feet, man. They were booing like crazy. They didn't want to see what they thought was about to happen.
Yeah.
And you could hardly hear Carson over the roar of the fans in the studio. But he screamed at Joe LeDuc that, he said something to the effect that, you know, you might as well forget Ron Fuller ever riding with you again, because he said there's no way Ron Fuller's ever going to come back to Southeastern again. And that's when Bob and Brad came to the set. They saw that Joe was in a bad situation. They wanted to back him up. They stood right next to Joe. And Charlie and Les could see that this was about to turn into something pretty ugly. And they called that call for the end of the profile.
Okay, so, I mean, I can see why. I mean, what a wild way to end a profile. I can only imagine what might have happened if they didn't wrap that thing up. All right, so who was up next?
Well, it was a brand new, totally different baby face, man. One that was so different than what had ever been probably in that part of the country, in Southeastern for sure. He came straight out of New York City, man, Johnny Valiant, man, and it was his first match ever in the Southern United States. He had always been up there in the north, and he decided he wanted to come south to Southeastern. I had heard a lot of good things about him, and so I was real happy to get a totally different type of baby face. And it didn't last long, and judging from the fans and my reaction as well, we really didn't know what to think about this guy. I mean, his wrestling style was so different than what I had been accustomed to down south, and he never did even say anything on this first show. He only wrestled in the match, and that was all he did. He had a great win, you know. I was impressed with him, but he was just a different character from the very beginning.
Okay, I remember him. He was going to leave everyone wondering everything about him. He was so different than any babyface I can even remember. All right. Was it time for the Alabama championship match for the belt?
Yes, sir. Ron Bass came out of the dressing room with Don Carson. And after their little near altercation at the profile set, the studio audience was ready basically for anything, man. And then when Bob appeared with the Alabama belt on, that studio went nuts again. And so the match began kind of slowly, but as it continued, some more wrestlers started to appear from both dressing rooms. First guy out was the Stomper. And when the Stomper came out, Joe LeDuc came out. Those two were going to be wrestling each other for the Southeastern belt in the next week. Then Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose came out of the dressing room, stood by the ring. So then they were Bob and Brad's next opponent for the tag team belts the following week. That brought Brad out, and he joined Joe LeDuc at ringside. And there, at this point, man, the match had picked up steam, and there was nobody sitting on the bleachers anymore. They were all standing up and going crazy. And they were cheering Bob, naturally, and time was running out on the show. And thank goodness it was, basically, because there was no standby match for this. If the match had ended, there would have been no other match that could have taken place. But the match turned into a fairly long one, and it got down to the end of the show. So when Carson made the first move, basically from the outside of the ring, he reached in and grabbed Bob by the lower leg so that Bass could get a little up on him. That was all it took, man. I mean, suddenly everybody on the floor was in the ring, and it was complete pandemonium. Charlie and Les, during that point, didn't have any other they didn't have any recourse other than they signed off. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to go. This is it. We're out of time. And the cameras were turned off, and the fight lasted for probably another 5 minutes in the ring. Wow. Where nobody even saw on the television show.
Wow. So they went to black and that thing was over. All right. You could see it building during the show, I'm sure. I don't remember that kind of ending to a TV show very often, but it was always good when it did happen. All right. Really, another great one, Stud. So what about the arenas the next week? How did you guys do there?
Well, the same thing happened with the Birmingham card as it had happened in the three major markets the week before. We discussed, in the last guest, and I'm going to describe what happened in the Thanksgiving card in those three major cities down south, Alabama. You know, Birmingham's card was basically same card exactly, and we talked about that in the last show. So I'm going to talk just about this new card that was for Thanksgiving down there in the southern Alabama area. Oki Shekinah, the first of two new Japanese stars that's about to arrive, got his first win over Ricky Fields. New York's John Valiant got his first win over El Lobo. Ron Bass, managed by Don Carson, got a win over Charlie Cook. And in the first of the three championship matches, Jerry Stubbs retained his United States Junior Heavyweight belt, but he did so in a 45-minute time limit draw match with Norvell Austin. What a great match that had to be, man. I didn't get to see that one, but it had to be. And in their first try, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose won the Southeastern belts from Bob and Brad Armstrong. In the last match of the night for the Southeastern Championship belt, Joe LeDuc ended up with the Stomper in his bear hug. And basically, that match was over. Joe LeDuc was going to be the new champion. And here came Ron Bass. And, he climbed into the ring. He didn't. He just went straight to the referee, grabbed him by the back of his shirt, and threw him over the top rope. And then he went back and he nailed LeDuc from behind. And then Bass and the Stomper and Carson, they had Joe down and they were pounding on him. And all of a sudden, a mass wrestler with a familiar looking body nobody in the building had ever seen before entered the ring. And he tore into the three of them like a madman, and they ran from the ring. So Joe got up and he hugged the masked man. And as they were leaving the ring, the announcer, still with his microphone, stopped the masked man. And he asked him over the microphone, he goes, wait, before you go, what's your name? So the masked man said, you can call me the Tennessee Stud.
Wow. Okay. And the legend began. That had to be a huge moment in Southeastern wrestling. All right. Had you ever worn a mask before in the Southeastern Gulf Coast territory?
No, I had not, Dave. And, I'd been there almost 3 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never lost a loser leave town match or anything like that. And, so it was my first time to ever wrestle there as the Tennessee Stud.
Wow. And what a tremendous ending that had to be for all the fans there. And speaking of all the fans, how about the attendances for the four major Southeastern cities?
Montgomery had 39, which was pretty close to what it had the week before. Dothan was at 49, right at 5,000. Birmingham had just over 6,000 people. We had 7,000 the week before. The building was still packed. And Mobile, it was on Thanksgiving night in that main arena, which held 10,000, had 9,100 fans. And that was only $100. When you add up those four cities,
mm-hmm.
that Birmingham in with Mobile, Dothan, and Montgomery, that was only $100 short of $24,000 in four nights.
Wow, in four nights. That had to be a great week, especially that time of year. All right, this has been fun as usual, and maybe we're going to get some more fun now. It looks like we have time for another Learning Tree question, so let's move to that. Charles Bonner, Chicago, Illinois, says, you have quite often lately mentioned the WTBS satellite TV station in Georgia, owned by Ted Turner back in the 1980s. You seemed to have used that station to your advantage quite often, but do you think that it had any effect on killing the territories in the 1980s? I think that's an interesting way to set this up. I want to hear this.
What a great question, Mr. Bonner. Wow. So, we did. I got to admit, we did use the power of Ted Turner's WTBS satellite TV station quite a bit. Actually, in the recent studcast, we took advantage of the exposure that Mr. Wrestling Number 2 got on that station, where he was a star there for many years in the early 1980s. Bob Armstrong and I took advantage of that station to another level in 1982, as a matter of fact. We had both booked our Southeastern territory through all of this coming year that we're going to be talking about of 1981. And we made a deal toward the end of that year with Rob that if he would take care of the territory for 1982, he would take over and handle things in 1982. And when 1982 rolled around, Bob and I, we got in touch with Ole Anderson, who was the booker for Jim Barnett, who owned the Georgia territory. And we asked him if we could work his territory. And basically, we were honest with him because we wanted to be seen as much as possible on WTBS, because that station covered the planet. It was a satellite station seen worldwide.
Yeah.
So obviously it didn't hurt our territory either to be seen around the world. So Bob spent much more time there in 1982 than I did. And he got tragically injured, man, in an accident in the Columbus, Ohio gym during that year while working that territory. And that injury basically, and he never admitted this and never said this, but to me, it affected him for the rest of his career. While at the same time that was going on, I had discovered the Cayman Islands in the Caribbean. And I had hooked up with a couple of businessmen down there that lived in the Caymans. And I made a deal with them to run wrestling matches there several times a year. So, Mr. Bonner, guess who's who everyone on that island got their wrestling from, right? They got it from WTBS in Atlanta, Georgia, man. So it was a pretty good deal. It worked out to be pretty good. So obviously, we did take advantage of that station, Mr. Bonner. And as far as your question about whether or not WTBS had an effect on killing the territories, funny that you should even ask that. And because my father was very close friends with Ted Turner. We lived in Atlanta. I went to, I was a senior in high school in Atlanta, Georgia. And my father and Ted Turner were very good friends, far back as into the mid-1960s, as a matter of fact. And Ted Turner was a huge wrestling fan. He ended up owning WCW. I mean, he had his own wrestling company. Eventually, he was so into wrestling, he wanted to own one. So one morning, you know, when I was a senior in high school, my father and I, after breakfast, we sat and had a little talk about this subject, Mr. Bonner, exact subject, long before there was even a WTBS TV station or even cable TV. My dad and I sat and talked about this because he had had a long conversation with Ted Turner about the industry, what's going to happen. Cable TV and the satellite station. I mean, it was a freaky subject. I mean, we were talking about stuff that we didn't have any idea. What is all this? What could all that be about? So as I, you know, and I think as my father did way back then, that kind of saturation of the sport, you know, my father, when we, the end of the conversation, my dad said, I think if all of this happens, now this is in the 1960s, and it's 20 years before all this is going to go down. My dad said, I think if that ever happened, it's going to be dangerous for the sport. So when it happened in the 1980s, when WTBS and even more so cable TV started making wrestling shows, you know, putting them on television from all over the country and making them available to everybody, it was the kiss of death for the sport, I think, Mr. Bonner.
Wow.
You know, thank you. I got to thank you, Mr. Bonner. It's a great question, you know, and I hope I've answered it to your satisfaction.
So interesting. All right. You've done it once again, Stud. You took one subject and turned it into many, all of them worth the ride, no doubt about it. This has been another great one. I can hardly wait for next week. So kind of give us an idea of what to expect next week. Set the ride up for us, Stud.
Well, we're going to be headed into the first week of December, 1980, about as bad a time as there could be for owning a wrestling company around the world. I mean, December was a terrible month. And what we just did with this Studcast, with me, it was going to hopefully give us a better December than most fans and hopefully give us the best maybe December ever. So fans can already see the new arrivals at this point. They were just beginning to get here. And there's going to be three more big time stars coming in the next 3 weeks in the next three Studcasts. And I've not done a live Facebook appearance in years. Folks, you know, and I'm going to be doing a very special live Facebook show. I'm going to actually do it tomorrow night, Thursday, December the 14th, 9 o'clock Eastern time. And hopefully I'd like to be on for about an hour or so. And my Ron Fuller, I'm going to be on the Ron Fuller Tennessee Stud Facebook page. Which, you know, is unlimited to the number of people that I can have on there to explain what basically, Dave, is coming in the next couple of weeks that's going to make everything that we do here a lot better. And if you're not already a friend there on that site and you would like to join in me in this, all you have to do is go to the Tennessee Stud, the Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud Facebook page. like me there, automatically become friends, and you can join me for this 1 hour little deal that I'm going to be doing, man, I'm going to have the opportunity to tell fans go dig a little deeper into what's coming.
Hey, that's cool. And, of course, everybody knows you can find Ron on Facebook, and especially now on Facebook to get set up for tomorrow night. That's pretty cool. Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like, follow in there, and automatically become friends with a living legend and become a part of this event tomorrow night. That's so cool. Twitter or X, he's at Ron Fuller Welch there, too. You can follow him there and keep up with everything on Twitter or X. Check out the fantastic website. TNstud.com. This studcast is going to be there with every studcast ever done. The Stud Store is where you can get 43 super studcast, 4 different 8x10 photos, and the best-selling novel, Brutus, personally autographed to you. And you can subscribe to Rod's YouTube channel. It's called Southeastern Rewind on YouTube. Southeastern Rewind on YouTube. There, you will find hundreds of hours of classic old-school wrestling entertainment, 453 total videos, the last 156 studcast, Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with the Stud. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic stud stories with worldwide stars. Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More fan question shows, superstars of the past shows, and so much more. That's YouTube Southeastern Rewind. It's the best deal in wrestling. Any final comments today, Ron?
Yeah, I'd like to thank everybody, man, for joining us today. And I hope you've enjoyed it. Hope to see you live and tomorrow night. And please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955 and on Twitter, X, Dave_Doin, D-O-I-N. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions, and hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.